Now, the reading that I would like to take is the first book of Chronicles and chapter 27. First Chronicles and chapter 27. We read a paragraph here from verse 25 to the end of verse 31. First Chronicles 27, commencing at verse 25. And over the king's treasures, or it's the same as the word storehouses later in the verse, over the king's storehouses was Azmaveth the son of Adiel, and over the storehouses in the fields, in the cities, and in the villages, and in the castles, was Jehonathan the son of Uzziah, and over them that did the work of the field for tillage of the ground was Ezri the son of Caleb. And over the vineyards was Shimei the Ramathite. Over the increase of the vineyards for the wine cellars was Zabdi the Shifmite. And over the olive trees and the sycamore trees that were in the low plains was Baalhanan the Gederite. And over the cellars of oil was Joash. And over the herds that fed in Sharon was Shitrei the Sharonite. And over the herds that were in the valleys was Shaphat the son of Adlai. Over the camels also was Obil the Ishmaelite, and over the asses was Jediah the Moronathite, and over the flocks was Jezes the Hagarite. All these were the rulers of the substance, which was King David's. And that's all the reading we take. We trust the Lord's blessing upon this portion of Holy Scripture. I have a particular target audience in my mind tonight. The ministry might go wider, but I'm especially thinking, in the word that I want to give from these verses, of someone who is busily involved in their local assembly, and you've become discouraged. You don't receive much appreciation for what you do. Hardly anyone ever makes an encouraging remark. You carry on diligently, week by week, month by month, year by year. Your name never appears in the magazine. You never stand on a platform like this. Your labors are unsung and unheralded. And maybe you're beginning to wonder, is it really worthwhile? Does anyone notice? Am I just wasting my efforts, extending them, perhaps, in a small little assembly, really to no account? Well, to such a discouraged person, I address my remarks from this paragraph in First Chronicles. And if you do not fall into the category, you're welcome also to listen in, and maybe there may be a little tidbit that you can value as well. In the scriptures, we have quite a number of groups of 12. Give us lessons. The 12 sons of Jacob, 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And from those groups of 12, we have often learned very, very important lessons. A lesser known group of 12 is what we have read here tonight. Because we have read a list of a dozen deputies that David had, and the various duties which those deputies discharged in his kingdom. And from David's dozen deputies and their duties, I want to learn some principles of Christian work and service. Now, I need to set the paragraph just for a minute or two in its larger context so that you will see making an application to assembly life is biblically and hermeneutically justified. We are not just inventing something. From 1 Chronicles chapter 22 to chapter 29, that's a large section of the book, about a quarter of the book, we have David's preparation for the temple that Solomon would build. Never called the temple in these chapters. Over 40 times it's called the house of God or the house of the Lord. A major part of David's affection and attention was directed towards the house of God. In the New Testament, the assembly is designated the house of God. And if we give the New Testament house of God parallel attention to what David gave the Old Testament house of God, I suspect that each assembly would be a thriving congregation of spiritual prosperity. In chapter 22 of this book, David, he gets a place for the house. He said, Solomon, you'll build it here, just where the altar is on the threshing floor of Arauna the Jebusite, the place. Chapters 23 to 26, he speaks about the personnel that will serve in that house, the priests and the porters and the praisers. And he spends a great deal of time on the service of song. And I say nothing more about that. In chapter 27, where we have read, the major part of that chapter is taken up with the protection of the house. If this great house was going to be raised to the honor of the Lord, a house of gold, a house of glory, it would need to be protected. And so David had a standing army. And they took a rota 12 months a year, soldiers that were always standing at the ready for the protection of the house of God. Again, lessons we can learn that I cannot develop just now. When you get to chapter 28, he gives Solomon the pattern for the house. He said, here I have it in writing, Solomon, you build it according to the pattern, God will be glorified. And in chapter 29, we have the prayer which David makes for the building of that house. Now, every one of those different aspects that I have just mentioned, all are different particulars pertaining to the house of God. And this paragraph that I want to speak about, it is tucked away in the middle of this particular section dealing with David's preparations for the temple. But you say, what is the relevance? Well, the relevance is simply this. You see, when the temple would be up and running, it would need quite a backup service. And if the backup service in any way faltered, the temple wouldn't function, or it wouldn't be maintained, or the service wouldn't run as smoothly as God intended. They were going to need animals to put on the altar. So there'll have to be somebody look after the animals. Work away out in the field. Graze the herds. Look after the sheep. We'd find a man here that if they're going to have wine to pour out as the drink offering, there'll have to be somebody away across the country yonder in the hillsides. He'll tend the vine. The beautiful wine that will be poured out in the temple will be but the end result of the hidden service of the man who cultivates the vines that are miles away. If they're going to have meal and flour for the meat offering, there'll have to be somebody sow the seed and cultivate the grain and harvest the crop and grind the flour. That will have to be done. And if they're going to have oil, there'll have to be someone away miles from Jerusalem, and he will cultivate and will shake and will strip and will harvest those olive groves. It will be difficult work. They'll be getting their hands dirty. And when this priestly service takes place in the temple, so glorifying to God, such a pleasure to behold, it will never be forgotten that behind this public service in the temple that was so pleasant, there were hours of hidden labor. There were hours of obscurity. There were many workers behind the scenes whose names were never heard, whose faces were never seen. But what took place in public in the temple depended upon the labors which they had engaged in private. Assembly life is like that. It's not all the platform business. It's not all the public meetings. We appreciate meetings, and we appreciate the public service of brethren. But behind the scenes, and away from the public eye, and hidden in obscurity. Many people work, labor, pray, entertain, organize, plan, think, hours and hours that are never mentioned in any magazine. And sometimes the people that do the most, they get very little publicity. I'm not saying they're looking for publicity, but they get a minimum of recognition, and there's always the possibility they could be discouraged. And a few people claim the limelight, when all the while the most of the real work is being done by people who are far from the limelight. Now, these dozen men were responsible for those different duties that I've just outlined, at least some of five things that I'll say, and my message will be brief and leave room for our visiting brother whom you've come to hear. First of all, let me say a little bit about the significance of their work. When you get to the end of the paragraph in verse number 31, it says, these were rulers of the substance which was King David. I love that. They knew we are handling material that belongs to the king. It might just be grapes in a vineyard. It might just be berries on an olive tree. It might just be cleaning out a bar for the herds. It might just be steeping sheep away down in the plains of Sharon, watching through the vigils of the night. It might just be doing what they said, it belonged to the king. Everything that they handled. These were rulers of the substance, which was King David's. You know, that gave a dignity to their work. That gave a tinge of royalty to their work. Even they were doing what seemed to be the most ordinary, the most basic, the most menial task. You say, sir, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just growing vines. No, he say, I'm working for the king. What are you doing, sir? I'm just looking after a couple of olive trees. No, I'm working for the king. These vineyards and these herds and these flocks and these fields and this grain, they don't belong to me. It's for the king. You know, the Apostle Paul could tell those slaves who had a very, very demoralizing task in New Testament times. He said, when you're there in the house of your master, just as a bond slave, just the offscouring of society, just the bottom layer in the levels of society. And he said, you find that your work is very frustrating. He says, don't forget this. You serve the Lord Christ. What do you do, dear brother? You say, well, I just give out the hymn book. It's a little business for the king. You say, I just clean the hall. I just look after the heating. Nobody ever talks about, well, if you can look after the heating, they'll talk about it for the next 200 years. But nevertheless, you say, I just do this or I just do that. And it's not very important. These fellas run about taking conferences and Bible readings. But I'm just one of the backroom boys. Don't forget, dear Christian, it's for the king. It's the substance that belongs to the risen Lord of glory. And the most menial task in the curriculum of assembly life. It doesn't take significance from what it is in itself. It takes significance for the fact that it's done for him. Whatsoever you do, whether in word or deed, says the Apostle Paul, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Go back to the Sunday school next week. Those handful of little children, and they broke your heart last year, and you're just about to throw in the towel. Go back next Sunday, or whenever the season starts, and do it as unto the Lord. They handled the substance that was King David's. It gave a dignity, a royalty, an honor, a privilege, a significance to the service of these 12 invaluable the backup servants for the temple. Let me say a little bit secondly about the sphere of their service. Not only its significance, it's for the king, but the sphere. There was a great variety here. I've already hinted at it. Some of them did their work in the valleys. You'll read about a man that kept, that looked after sycamore trees in the valleys. I'll be back to tell you what sycamore trees had to do with the temple just in a minute or two. And you read about other men that were in the villages. And you read about some men that were in the fields. And you read about others, and they did their work in the low plains. And you read about another fellow, and he looked after the asses. As far as I can see, there's always a fair wee bit of donkey work to be done in an assembly. You say, what have donkeys and camels got to do with the temple? Well, it's very simple, friends. When those things were cultivated, and the grapes were gathered, and the olives were harvested, away across on the plain of Sharon, and away down in the valley, they needed something to take them up to the temple. So camels and asses were useful for burden bearing, and for transport. Maybe you're just a bit of a donkey about the place. You carry the burdens. You do the transport. You bring the older Christians to the meetings. Oh, dear Christians, it didn't matter. It didn't matter, you know, whether a man was in the field or the valleys or he was up in the higher slopes. It didn't matter where he was. He had this satisfaction that I'm just operating in the sphere that has been given to me by the king. He wasn't jealous. The man that worked in the city or close to Jerusalem, he in no way looked down his nose on the man that was away out in the low plains. And the man in the low plains wasn't burning green with jealousy because he wasn't up in the city. It's New Testament truth. They were all contributing to the same house. They were in different spheres with different tasks. A diversity in their setting, but a unity in their contribution. That's good. It's a great thing, you know, when you can learn where you slot into assembly life. We have an awful people not content. They're fidgeting and shuffling and jostling and elbowing, trying to push others out and trying to push themselves in. And the half of the people that are pushing for positions, they're not fit to fill them. And others that could fill them are sitting on the sidelines doing, dear Christian, I say this, God is a work in this dispensation. It's not a temple of marble and limestone. It's a spiritual house, the congregation of the living God. That little assembly that you're associated with, you're working for the king. There's a place for you. There's a sphere for you. Find out what your sphere is and fill it. Fill it. To the glory of Christ. And to the satisfaction of your own soul. Don't waste your emotional energy always looking for another sphere. Always looking for every one of these 12 men a different position, a different place. And the comfort in it all was, what took the jealousy and the discontentment out of it all was this, I'm just here because of the appointment of the king. Actually, there were some things in the temple, and they could only grow them in the valley. There were some of these people, and to get what the temple needed, some of those special products that really enriched the service of the temple, to get those products for the temple, there were some of these men had to go away down into the low plains. Did you ever wonder why the Lord allows some of his people to go into the valley? I would nearly be sure, as I take a quick glance around this little audience tonight, since the last Craigie Hill conference, some of you Christians have been in the valley, maybe a valley that you never thought you would be in. And the Lord put you in a position of humiliation. You could hardly understand it all. You know, dear Christian, it could be as a result of your valley exercise and experience that you'll be able to make a contribution to the house that otherwise you would never have given. The Lord arranges all of these things. Some in the plains, some in the valleys, some in the higher places, some in the fields, laboring the tillage. Oh, it mentions the tillage. And if assembly life is to prosper, there always have to be people working in the fields, and the tillage, and breaking the soil, and sowing the seed, and waiting on the harvest. We need ministers of agriculture as well as ministers of viticulture, all of the variety. I better leave that. The significance of their work, the sphere of their work, are all apostles. They weren't all vineyard keepers. Are all prophets? No. Are all teachers? God has set in the church as it pleased him. You know, there was a fella here who worked in the cellars. I said, well, I wouldn't have liked that one. He was the man that looked after the cellars. Imagine having to go to a cellar and look after wine, an old dingy dungeon of a cellar. And there he's away down setting all the vessels on shelves, and nobody ever sees him. And he's working there out of sight, in the obscurity of oblivion, down in a cellar with oil and wine. You say, but that's enough. It's for the king. Dear Christian, there are products for the sanctuary, and they can only be developed in the cellar. We're living in a show world, you know. Everybody has to be seen. If you're worth tuppence, or if you're worth your salt, you have your own Facebook page. And you'll have to promote your hobbies and your abilities and a few pictures of yourself. Let the world see what you look like. They're just waiting on your image. You really have to advance your own interests, and you have to present your a rubbishy world of sensationalism and show. And listen, people, it has brought us down to absolute shallowness. We have lost the private of life. Tell me, man, how much oil have you developed in the cellar? Some of you younger brethren. It's all right to spend time with a girlfriend driving about. But that's not where you get material for the sanctuary. It's work in the cellar, in a small chamber, away from the glare of sunlight and publicity, that some of the real precious products were developed. Learn the privacy of exercise in the secret of God's presence, as that good old hymn tells us. Away from the glare of human light and sight, misunderstood by all, I dare to do what thine own heart would praise, alone with thee, O Master, where the light of earthly glory. I better say a little bit about the substance. I've already mentioned some things. The substance that they handle. These are the things. They're going to need flocks. So there's a man we'll look after, and he's a Hagarite. I loved that a boy descended from Hagar was in David's dozen. And there's another boy called, he's an Ishmaelite. You know, there are a few Ishmaelites here tonight. We were belonged to the outside, but grace has brought us in, and not only brought him in, but gave him employment in the royal service. That's what the Apostle Paul said. Grace was magnified, and he said, he saved me, and he counted me faithful. Put me into the ministry, he says, unto the King Eternal be everlasting praise. Here he is. Flocks are needed. That'll be for the worship. Flocks were fed down in the plain of Sharon. If you could see those beautiful, fertile plains of Sharon, it would make some of the farmers, it would just make your eyes open and shut, be jaw-dropping. You see, when some of those flocks came from the plain of Sharon and up to the altar, there was as much fat, in the Leviticus sense of fat, as filled the altar. Sheep, herds. Because of what these men do in private, the worship of the house is going to be greatly enhanced. Then there's another man who keeps oil. It's amazing if you were to think about it, how much oil was needed in the oil for the light, oil for baking, oil for anointing. It's a place that needed tremendous quantities of oil. That's why there was a man over the olive yards and over the cellar with it, because, you know, the assembly would always need a brave wee bit of oil. Bring in something spiritual, dear Christian. But if you're going to have oil for the sanctuary, you'll have to do a bit of cellar work and a bit of harvesting away from the public eye. It will all be part of that. They had flocks and herds for the worship. They had oil for the light. They had wine. That's another commodity greatly used. Wine. Drink offerings. Joy. But again, there were men working in vineyards miles away. It's great, I say to us all tonight, and I'm going to have to wind in here. It's great to bring a wee bit of oil. Great to bring a little piece of rich worship. It's great to bring joy. You know, there's some Christians don't bring much joy with them. In fact, I shouldn't tell you this. I think it was a Baptist congregation. It must have been you know that by the story. I read a while ago about it. The pastor of a congregation, as they have in that organization, a pastor in the States, he phoned up another pastor about 2 hours away on a Sunday afternoon. He said, "I've good news for you, bad news for you." And the other man, well, he says, "Give me the good news first." He said, "You're going to have 4 new members next Lord's Day." He said, "There are 2 couples leaving the congregation here." He said, "They've been with us for years." And he says, "They'll be with you, you'll be 4 more next Lord's Day." The man says, "That's good." He says, "We're always glad to welcome others." He said, "That's great." Well, he said, "You want the bad news?" He said, "The 4 of them are the puss pocket of this congregation." Now, I never heard of a puss pocket. It must be an Americanism. Some of these brethren can help me out. But to be honest, I didn't have to get a dictionary to look it up. You know, there are people, and they just bring sour pus. Don't be bringing pus. Bring wine. Bring wine. Anybody could have some old suppurated sore that they've cultivated for years, and they bring the pus into every meeting, and they spoil the meetings. Bring a little bit of wine and a little bit of oil. And so they arrive. And he said, right enough, for the next 14 years, every time there was a bit of bother, he knew it was these couples at the start of it. The pus. You know, there are certain places, if I hear there's trouble, I'll know who'll be in the middle of it. And I know who'll be at the bottom of it. It's just their pus makeup. No, the sanctuary needs oil. It needs fattened sheep. It needs those herds. It needs rich things. It needs food and flour. I better leave all that. They had plenty to work with. And these were. Let me say a word about the stewardship of their service. You'll have noticed there's a little preposition that keeps recurring as you go down the chapter. It says, over the vineyards, so and so. Over the cellars, so and so. Over them that worked in the fields. Over such and such. Over. Now that simply means, as you can understand, these men were responsible for it. They had to give an account to the king. You imagine how embarrassing it would have been if they needed some wine for a drink offering and the vessels were empty. And David sent down to the man that kept the wine cellar. Or Solomon. And the word came back, "Sorry, the cellar's empty." Or if they needed oil. And they went down to the oil cellars and there was nothing there. The man hadn't been doing his work. You know, those men that were over each particular section of this supply, each man was responsible to give an account to the king, both for the quantity and the quality of the goods that he was producing for the sanctuary. I say to us all, dear Christians, we too have responsibilities. You know, it's required in stewards that a man be found faithful. The overseer, the Sunday school teacher, the sister with her home and the hospitality that she could provide. Everybody has a service to render. That's what I want to encourage you with. Don't be discouraged that your service is insignificant if the Lord has given you a remit of responsibility. Look after it, because in the coming day, He'll not be asking you about her service. And you'll not give an account of His. You'll just give an account of what was your responsibility. They had a stewardship. The last thing that I mention and sit down is this. The statement of their service. Here we are 3,000 years later. And we're still reading about these men. You say, but it was obscure. It was off the main stage. They were away out in the country areas. You say nobody will ever mention it. Well, that's maybe what we would think. But the scriptures make a statement of it. And can I say to all the Christians here, whatever you do worthily of the Lord, it will go down in heaven's records. It will be read in a coming day. And it will be fully rewarded by the Lord to whom the service has been rendered. I didn't speak with Brother Brown about the opening hymn. It was a rather unusual hymn that he gave out. Good hymn, Anna Waring's hymn. But if I had been here picking a hymn for this meeting, it's the hymn that was in my mind. Particularly two lines, and with this I conclude. What should be the ambition of our lives? Content to fill a little space if the Lord be glorified. David's dozen deputies and their duties, and every one of them was content to fill his space, to give his supply and all of it for the honor of the king. Go back to your duty. Don't be discouraged. The sloth. Take a fresh interest in the contribution that you can make. It has significance, for at all you will give a stewardship. And thank God, be assured that all will be appreciated by the Lord himself. May the Lord bless his word and encourage those discouraged hearts that I have been seeking to speak to.